This is Noah Villaverde, host of the Blank Green Canvas podcast. And before I present to you this episode in which me and my friend John Matthew discuss Aladdin, the new Disney live-action remake, I just wanted to give you a bit of a word of warning because when putting this episode together, because I'm from California and John is from New York, we were recording this via Facebook caller. So you may hear a bit of an echo on his end, unfortunately, because of the way my microphone picks up the audio from the call that he and I were having together. It picks it up so well that because there's an audio delay as a result of the Wi-Fi connection, you may hear that quite a bit, a little bit of an echo, unfortunately, during this episode of the podcast. But overall, thankfully, John and his microphone picked his stuff up pretty well. So when mixing it together, you could still hear him and you could still hear our camaraderie despite the problem with the Wi-Fi connection. So I just wanted to give you that word of warning before I present to you with this episode, but please bear with it because John and I have a pretty fun discussion in regards to the new Aladdin film as well as our thoughts on Disney live-action remakes, and we even bond a bit on our love for Disney and Disney parks as well. So I hope you enjoy this episode of the Blank Green Canvas podcast. Hello, I am Noah Villaverde, and you are listening to the Blank Green Canvas podcast, episode 2. This week, I'm going to be joined by my good friend, John Maffio, aka Mathman Jones, live in New York. How are you doing, John?
Yeah, I'm doing all right. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right overall. You know, just got back from my job at the movie theater. Quite fitting. How was your Memorial Day weekend?
It was good. It was pretty lax. You know, everybody's out doing their own thing here. A lot of my friends are out doing their own thing. So I just kind of laid back with the family and the girlfriend and had some burgers and chicken and whatnot.
You had a barbecue and everything. Pool. That's nice.
Yeah, we had nice weather here in New York this weekend, thankfully. No rain. So we were able to actually do things.
Oh, that's great. You know, like, so no rain over there in New York. It's funny because, you know, I'm from Fresno, California, and the weather right now is pretty weird for summertime in California. It's been cloudy. It's felt like Seattle for the last week and a half or so. And what's weird is that I used to love that rainy day aesthetic. That used to be like my hashtag aesthetic, basically. I loved it. But since
the mood, the vibe.
Yeah, but June is coming up, and I want it to be summer. And I'm kind of getting tired of this whole cloudiness, you know? I want a little bit more sunlight. I want it to be summertime, you know?
Yeah, you live in California. You only deserve that as much.
That's true. But when people say, whenever I tell anybody I'm from California, like you or others that I've met like through the groups or whatever, they would think, oh, you're from LA, San Francisco, San Diego? Well, no, I'm actually from Fresno, California, which is the Central Valley of California, which is like right slack dab in the middle of it. So it's kind of the equivalent of like middle America, but in California. But what's great about the valley is that it's a decent driving distance to like San Francisco to LA. So like, let's say if I want to go to Disneyland, it would only take about like a 4.5 hour drive maybe, which is nothing, you know? So like,
that's not bad at all.
Or going to the beach, maybe 2 or 3 hour drive. That's a decent drive. Not too bad.
Yeah. Do you have a lot of traffic in situations like that though, or it's mostly a straight shot?
It depends, usually. Like, if it's a busy weekend, obviously. Like, if I went, like, over this weekend for, like, Memorial Day weekend, it would probably be a little more traffic-based, you know? And there's certainly other areas in California that are heavier in traffic than Fresno is, obviously. But, you know, it is what it is. And, yeah, I guess I could say that that's the benefit of living in a really small town. Not really small town, but, like, a smaller-ish kind of area in California compared to the rest of the hubbub that you think of when you think of like LA or San Francisco.
Yeah, what places that people normally think of.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, so there's that. Hopefully all you listeners had a good time with your Memorial Day weekend. I always mumble when I try to say memorial, you know, like
memorial.
Yeah, I should be a rapper. I wonder what my rapper name would be. But okay, so this week, first of all, I wanted to say thank you to everybody who listened to last week's episode, the pilot episode, in which me and my friends discussed the series finale of Game of Thrones. I'm really pleased with the listenership that I received from that and everything else. And I'm excited that I am joined here with my friend John. So we discuss the newest Disney live-action remake, It is of the animated 1992 classic Aladdin. But before we get into talking about that film, we are going to be talking about some of our favorite memories in regards to the original 1992 animated film, which I assume you grew up on just like I did.
Oh, absolutely. This my bread and butter when I was growing up, which I'm very blessed to have been. But yeah, I used to have all the VHSs of all the movies.
The clamshells, the clamshell ones.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. And they all different, some of them have different colors, too, depending on the movie you had. But that was more Nickelodeon, too, I think.
Oh.
But yeah, Disney had all the classics. Never had any of the sequels, but all the original animated Renaissance movies, and even beyond that.
Yeah.
They're somewhere in my basement right now.
Yeah, I think me and my family got rid of our old VHS tapes, which kind of makes me a bit sad. But, like, with Aladdin, obviously it's one of the big classics, especially of that Disney Renaissance era that was kickstarted in 89, I believe, with The Little Mermaid, in which Disney just kept releasing just hit after hit after hit, instant classic after instant classic. And in a lot of ways, Aladdin was something for us boys, especially because, you know, during that time, Disney was mainly releasing, like, princess movies, which I also love, you know, and there's a princess in Aladdin, too, but Aladdin is Aladdin, you know, and he's one of us, and
he's a dude.
Yeah, he was like a brother, you know, basically to us and everything. And it was just fun, exciting, beautiful music, incredible animation, and obviously Robin Williams as the genie, iconic role for him, one of his most iconic roles in an already iconic filmography. And you know, like, we're talking about this right now and a lot of our memories with that original film, because there's so many elements of that film that are just brilliant, and that's why I brought up all those little elements, because lately Disney has been on a kick of adapting a lot of their animated movies in live action form, and for better or for worse, they've been doing pretty well box office wise. Well, I guess except for Dumbo, maybe.
Yeah, right? The ones that, like, a lot of them are making their money back.
Or yeah,
I think even Dumbo made its budget back.
Yeah, it made its. I'm not sure. Perhaps it did. You know, I actually missed Dumbo. I didn't get a chance to check it out. I might check it out when it gets on Disney Plus later this year. When that.
Yeah, you know it's gonna be there.
Yeah, it will be there definitely, along with the entire Disney library. But okay, so let's go over a few of those Disney live action films before we get into Aladdin itself. Okay, so where do we start from there? Like.
Yeah, let's do it. Was Jungle Book the first big one with Jon Favreau?
No, I think I think Cinderella came in before, you know?
You're right, it was. That was 2015.
Yeah, I actually like Cinderella a lot. I saw that at a screening when it came out, and I was surprised by how I was actually enchanted by it. You know, I thought it was.
Hey, pun intended.
Sure, sure. But what I liked about Cinderella is that, sure, it is Cinderella through and through, but I found it really expertly made. That was Kenneth Branagh who directed it, I believe.
Yes,
and he definitely brought a lot of his own sensibilities to that. And also, it kind of helped kickstart my huge crush on Lily James, which hasn't stopped since.
Lily James is so good.
She's so good in that movie.
And she's so pretty, too.
Yeah, you know, like, I mean, that of course, that's why I mentioned it kickstarted my huge crush on Lily James that only grew larger. I'm pretty sure I only watched Mamma Mia 2 for her. You know, but I actually like Cinderella.
I can't blame you.
Yeah, I like Cinderella a lot. It's just beautifully shot, really touching. It's that Disney magic. It really is Disney magic to me. I like that movie a lot. There were a few other live action films that came out along the way. There was The Jungle Book from Jon Favreau, which I'm a big fan of. And what did you think of The Jungle Book?
I liked it a lot. I feel the same way with Cinderella too. I think because Jon Favreau and Kenneth Branagh have their sensibilities in there. They've done a lot as directors in the past, so they kind of bring their own to the table, their own attributes. And with The Jungle Book, I've only seen the original animated movie like once or twice when I was a kid, but this one, it's not necessarily a kid's movie. It has a lot of dark tones and themes going on, and a lot of frightening imagery, which I actually really admired there. And I saw it, like, Idris Elba as Shere Khan is one of the best things about that movie.
Absolutely.
And I mean, not to spoil it, but like the way he plays that character and the way they animate his character, I think a lot of kids were probably very frightened and had a nightmare too.
Oh, that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think, it depends on the approach and the directors they get. And I would say with Jungle Book, it was a slam dunk because They got Jon Favreau, and they're lucky to have him from Iron Man and all this because yeah. the guy knows how to make great movies.
I believe he's about to be inducted to be a Disney legend this year.
At this point? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's the thing about Jon Favreau. He really added a lot of his person. Like, he knows that story very well. I quite enjoy The Jungle Book, too, because I'll say this much. Jungle Book means a lot to me because it was... I played King Louie in my school play when I was in the sixth grade. So...
So you sang the song and everything.
Too, oh yeah, right? I want to be like you, you know. And Christopher Walken as King Louie was just brilliant to me. I just loved what they did with King Louie in particular. Also, they made him Gigantopithecus, I think is how they called them, instead of just a chimpanzee like in the mm-hmm. in the animated film, because they made him feel larger than life. The voice cast there was like terrific, and the visual effects were just terrific in that one as well. Another live action film. We're gonna go through a few of them. One that was underseen. That wasn't seen as much because it's not... I guess the original film was also live-action, had a live-action elements too, but this was a remake. Pete's Dragon, I actually...
Yeah, I had a feeling you were going this way too when you said that.
I like Pete's Dragon a lot. I find it to be very touching, very sincere, very expertly made reimagining of the story. I'll be the first to admit I barely remember the original film. I think I saw it when I was little once. But it never resonated with me, which is kind of why you don't really hear people talk about the original that much when they talk about Disney classics. You saw Pete's Dragon, right? What'd you think?
I did. I don't remember seeing the original. I just remember there was an animated dragon on a backdrop of live action.
Yeah.
But the director of that one is David Lowery, the guy who made the Ghost Story.
Yeah.
And the Old Man with the Gun. And I, looking back now, it makes sense that he would make this movie. I just remember really liking the relationship between the kid and the dragon, and I think I might have gotten emotional once or twice.
I love the design.
Absolutely. I don't know if I would call it a great movie only because I don't reflect on it in a way where I remember a lot of it. But in the moment watching it, it was a great experience, and I would definitely recommend it. But yeah, I wouldn't put it on the upper tier of Disney live action movies.
It
does deserve more love.
I sure. Yeah, it's something that I definitely recommend if you haven't had a chance to see the remake of Pete's Dragon that came out about 2 or 3 years ago. I'd definitely recommend it. And then we're going to get to a few of the ones that I'm pretty sure most people have seen. One in particular that is pretty, I wouldn't say polarizing may not be the word, but it had a lot of hype when it came out because of the movie it was based on, you know, and I was pretty excited for it too. Beauty and the Beast, 2017.
Oh, yeah.
For me, with this movie, it's pretty interesting because I was really excited for it. And when I went to go see it, I enjoyed it in the moment and everything else mm-hmm. because all the pieces were there. But, you know, upon reflection, I haven't seen it since it hit theaters or since I saw it in theaters. And upon reflection,
same.
I feel like the movie really falls short in, like, a lot of the ambitions it's trying to go for. I mean, there's some individual performances that I liked in there. You know, Josh Gad as LeFou. I liked Luke Evans, you know, as Gaston enough. But honestly, like a lot of the rest of the movie, I felt kind of fell flat for me in upon reflection. And it's sad for me to say this because I love Emma Watson, but I don't think she was right for Belle. I mean, she's beautiful to play Belle, but like she didn't have the pipes. Her singing just wasn't on point. I'm a big fan of Dan Stevens as an actor, you know, but I wasn't a big fan of the design for the Beast. You know, that's one thing. And also, mm-hmm. I just feel like the movie was trying to be a sweeping... It should have been more sweeping and more huge and epic in its scale. And I felt like it just didn't sit right at the end of it when they tried to conclude it. Because when you look at the original animated film, that is probably... That is actually the first animated film that got nominated for Best Picture. And
I think it was.
And it was that movie's a masterpiece in my eyes, that original animated classic. And my issue with the live action remake is they really didn't add much to it other than just using it in live action form. It felt pretty generic to me, not rewatchable at all. I haven't gone back to listen to their versions of the songs. You know, and it's,
yeah.
If I'm being really honest with you, I think it might be my least favorite of the ones I've seen of all the live action adaptations.
I might agree with you because you mentioned before that it fell flat for you, but I feel like the directing and the whole visual style of the movie is pretty flat. There's not much going on. that brings anything new to the table, but it's not even anything that could really sweep you in as an audience member either.
Yeah.
A lot of the acting is fine.
Yeah.
And they kind of just follow the same beats as the animated movie, which I guess you should do.
It is a remake. The perfect movie.
Yeah, it's kind of, it reminds me kind of like, we're going to get to it, but like Aladdin or like Lion King, like these movies are perfect animated movies, so to translate them, if you're going to do it in live action, you should try to do something different.
Yeah. And Bill Condon is a competent director. You know, I love Dreamgirls in particular, you know. It's just, I guess my issue overall is that the movie itself is just a competently made remake with that really just kind of adds nothing to it. It just makes the movie kind of stale on reflection. It doesn't hold up. I have a feeling if I just checked it out again on streaming or whatever, it just won't hold up, and I'll just think to myself, why won't I just watch the original right now, you know?
Yeah, at that point it seems like a movie like that is better for a theater experience than it is for just a regular movie.
It is,
because it's cool to see it on the novelty of, oh, it's a live-action remake of this movie we love.
It is.
But yeah, I don't think it has much beyond that.
It is. And, okay, so I'm bringing up all these specific ones. Some people might be thinking, wait, why aren't you bringing up, you know, like Maleficent or the Alice in Wonderland movies or whatever? Well, it's because they're super loosely based on the original. Or Christopher Robin, for example, to an extent. Sorry if you hear a
like
bit
the properties
wheezing,
there, but they're different stories.
Yeah, they're using those original properties, but kind of telling their own stories in a different way, you know? So that's why I don't really bring them up. I actually didn't see Christopher Robin. Did you see that?
I did. It didn't really do anything for me either, but I did admire that it took a different direction with the story. It doesn't always hit the beats where it wants to emotionally and dramatically, but I think it's worth a watch if you're a fan of the property.
Interesting, because I see some clips from that movie or the trailers for that movie, and I'm thinking, you know, whoever directed the Paddington movies would have been a perfect fit for that, you know?
Oh, if you're looking for that joy, like the joyous nature and like just the sweeping spectacle of it, yeah, that would have been great.
Yeah, like, sorry if we're not going to talk about Christopher Robin that much as a result of me not seeing it, but I still kind of want to check it out one of these days, maybe when it's on Disney Plus. That's basically where I'll end up watching it. Same thing with Dumbo, which I have not seen yet, which Tim Burton got a chance to direct. Did you see Dumbo?
No, but I did hear that. I mean, we were talking about it, but I think it's like the first 25 minutes or so is the animated movie, and then it sprawls off into like a sequel of sorts.
Yeah.
So it's not all, Tim Burton did his own thing with it, it seems like.
Yeah, like, for better or for worse, you know, Tim Burton, whose filmography is iconic, but also hit or miss, especially in the later years of his career.
Yeah, these days especially. Yeah.
Yeah, like, he still has his stamp and his voice, and I'll admit, it's fun seeing, you know, Batman and Penguin reunite.
Yeah, that's cool.
You know, so I still got to see it for that reason, you know, but... So we brought up all these live-action Disney remakes. You know, Lion King is coming out in a few months and everything else. Disney seems to be playing very well, marketing-wise, on the nostalgia that viewers have for those original animated films. Which brings us to talk about Guy Ritchie's Aladdin. Now, before we talk about the actual movie itself, let's talk about how we felt about the marketing leading up to it. Because, oh boy, the marketing was pretty interesting, right? So...
You could have a whole day's worth of topics for the marketing alone.
It's the very first teaser, though, okay? The very first teaser.
The very first teaser, before we saw the genie.
Yeah, before we saw, Will Smith. So the teaser is pretty generic. You know, it's like a bunch of CGI shots of Agrabah or the desert, you know, with some of the music cues playing from Alan Menken's iconic score from the original film.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, we'll see what happens. Then we see that shot of Aladdin grabbing the
reaching
lamp
for the lamp,
and that's it.
Yeah,
okay, whatever. It, like, for me as someone who feels like these live action movies are pretty hit or miss overall from Disney, I'm thinking, okay, we'll see what happens from here. Nothing much. I'll check it out. Like, that was basically it, I guess, in your terms also. Yeah. Like,
really quick though, I just want to point out really quick though that it's almost beat for beat the same teaser trailer as the first for Beauty and the Beast 2017, where it's a couple sweeping establishing shots and the ending is like the main character.
Yeah.
In like a medium shot.
I was a sucker for that first Beauty and the Beast teaser, though, I'll admit. Like, regardless of how I feel about the movie now, I still think that teaser was pretty beautiful.
Yeah, it was. Well, especially with Alan Menken's music.
Yeah,
in the background.
The piano playing and the way it focuses on Belle when she looks at the rose. You know, yeah. I like, well, partially also because of my love for Emma Watson. So it got me excited.
That shines through.
Yeah, we're both Harry Potter fans here, as you could tell.
Yes, absolutely.
So, and then a few months later, was it during the Oscars? Or the Grammys, I forget.
It might have been the Grammys.
Yeah, either one of those two. They released a TV spot, a 1 minute long TV spot that began with a bunch of shots first from the film, you know, like typical like choreography, some of the set of Agrabah. And then all of a sudden, what Disney was hoping was going to be their mic drop moment in the TV spot, we see Aladdin rubbing the lamp. Oh boy, let's see what happens here. And then all of a sudden,
That's where everybody was kind of just like, oh.
Here's how I reacted, if I'm being quite honest. When I saw that TV spot and then Will Smith popped up, I was just thinking to myself, huh? Like, Disney.
Yeah, it's kind of the same thing. It was like a, okay.
Disney, you've been making the most money by far of any major studio over the last, basically this whole decade. And that was the best you can come up with the CGI. Like, I was shocked by that.
It also was like literally like 2 or 3 seconds, so it wasn't enough time to process it either. It's just
they chose the worst shot possible for that TV spot.
Yeah, they did.
You know, because it did not garner any goodwill, and apparently after the backlash that TV spot received, Disney had to go on emergency mode and release the Frozen 2 trailer like pretty quickly afterwards.
It was right immediately after, right? It was.
Yeah. Because they didn't want everyone to just keep roasting them over Will Smith genie and the design and everything else. So that's what happened, that was a good trailer. Yeah. That was a good trailer. I liked
it. Was a good idea on their part.
Yeah, it was a good idea. And on a tangent, by the way, when I watched that Rise of Skywalker trailer, you know how the very last shot of that trailer is Rey, Finn, and Poe staring off at the remnants of the Death Star? You know? Yes. I kept thinking of the end of the Frozen 2 trailer because it's literally the exact same layout where...
It is kind of the same.
You know, where Anna, Elsa, like, they're just kind of... And Olaf and them, they're just standing there and they're looking off at the horizon. I'm like, oh my goodness, did they just copy each other? I mean, it's Disney. It's Disney.
J.J. Abrams and the people who made Frozen, they had like a meeting together.
Yeah, it's actually like, all connected. We like that show. It's all connected in some way. It's canon. We're also Star Wars fans.
It's poetic. It rhymes.
Yeah, of course. But but like, so there's that. And then about a month or two later, they released the actual trailer that gives us a bigger sense of what Guy Ritchie and Disney was trying to do with this live action version. And I'll say this. I was getting a little more, okay, I think this looks okay. Like, sure, some of the CG is a little questionable, but it's better in motion with the shots they showed us. Like, that one promo still of Will Smith, you know, pointing and smiling at Aladdin in his blue form. I thought, hey, that works overall. I mean, sure, it's a little funny. And then, of course, there's those moments where we see him as a human, where they kind of focused more on that in the marketing later on. It was like, okay, that's fine. You know, so... So like, the marketing has been pretty interesting for this movie, and it's kind of made the movie a bit of a topic of like ridicule online. Definitely. I mean, at least in Will Smith's case, he's not the blue character design that everybody's roasted as badly anymore because of a certain hedgehog, you know. Oh, that was weird. Sorry about that. We kind of had a bit of a drop in our connection. I don't know if it's because of the California-New York time limits or whatever, but...
Something strange is afoot.
Yeah, something strange is afoot. Maybe it's the genie. I'm not sure. Maybe it's Disney trying to snipe at us for going back to that whole marketing fiasco with Aladdin. But, okay, so going back to the actual movie itself, you know, the movie itself was getting... mostly mixed reviews online. You know, Rotten Tomatoes has it like at a 60%, but it seems like audiences, like general mainstream audiences seem to enjoy it so far. So I started kind of getting a little more intrigued by the movie as it was coming along, partially because it's like, you know, it's still Aladdin, and I'm still curious to see what Guy Ritchie and Disney did in bringing it to life. And you know, I love Aladdin by the end of the day. And it's also, I can't deny it, I'm a Disney-phile. You know, I've been to Disneyland so many times, you know, growing up and in recent years. And I plan on going there again this summer for a certain Galaxy's Edge, you know, to visit that place.
Lucky, lucky.
But
you.
So before I get into my thoughts on the movie itself, let's. How about you, John? What did you think about the movie overall? Getting into it, yeah.
Might be losing you again. We're talking about the anime one, right?
Yeah. So what did you think about the movie? Yeah, sorry about the connection there, guys, again. Yeah, we're talking about, we're actually talking about the live-action one now. Like, you went to go see it. When did you go see it?
Actually, so I went to see it on, like, a Friday afternoon, and there was nobody else in the theater besides, like, maybe one or two people. And when I went, I didn't go in expecting that much, to be honest, because of what happened with Beauty and the Beast. And not right. to say that I was impressed by it, but I didn't walk out with, like a frown on my face. Like, I enjoyed the experience. Probably a lot of it probably was nostalgia and how it hit me in a certain way with the feels. But also, I think a lot of the performances are good. And Naomi Scott and Will Smith do great in the movie. And I think it does the best job next to, like, the Jon Favreau adaptation of Jungle Book of bringing a new feel while at the same time presenting a thing that you know already and you're familiar with. Most of the musical parts of it are good. I could talk about what I didn't like later. But
yeah,
overall, I think it's, I would definitely watch this again, which is something that I can't say about Beauty and the Beast. I would definitely watch this again, whether it was on TV, cable, or on Disney Plus. This isn't a movie that I would just put on in the background, just kind of like, oh, it's this. Like, I actually would watch it again. And, I wish they did a little more creatively with it, but I understand, like, Guy Ritchie, you definitely feel like he made this movie in certain parts. For the most part, it does feel like another corporate cash grab of a remake right now. But I can't lie and say I didn't have a good time with it. I had a great time with it. It's just it didn't really leave an impression on me.
Yeah, okay. So I guess all I need to do is just kind of repeat, like, the exact thing you just said, or just use your file and pretend it's me saying it. Because you kind of represented my thoughts almost verbatim on the movie. Because I went to go see it last night, right? I went to go see it last night, and I was actually kind of getting pretty excited. Okay, maybe excited is a bit of too much to say. I was starting to get really interested as the movie began. And I will say, like, I did have a good time. I definitely had a good time watching the movie. You know, I enjoyed the colors. I enjoyed the new renditions of the songs for the most part. Like, not perfect renditions, but I liked them. Mm-hmm. Will Smith, who everybody thought was, they were horrified by. I thought he was honestly probably the highlight of the movie for me. You know, he brought a lot of his Fresh Prince charm to the genie. And I do appreciate that Disney and Guy Ritchie decided, you know what, we can't replicate Robin Williams, so let's not even try doing something just like Robin Williams. Let's get a different kind of personality. And even when they announced him, I appreciated they were going for a Will Smith kind of personality to play the genie, and it helped. You know, even with, like, the animation and the design of the genie, it seemed to work for what they were going for. You know, like, during, like, the Friend Like Me sequence or other sequences in the movie, mm-hmm. like, whether he was blue or in live-action form, I always enjoyed seeing Will Smith on screen. Same thing you bring up on Naomi Scott. I really liked her in the film as Jasmine. You know, she has a nice singing voice and everything, you know, and yeah, like, overall, the movie it's a fun movie overall. I enjoyed myself watching it more than I didn't. It's actually surprisingly decently paced, I think, better than Beauty and the Beast's pacing.
Yeah, I would agree with
overall.
That.
And they do some different things in the movie, like, not crazy different, but they do add something to the movie about the genie.
Yes,
which we won't get into too much, you know, but it was a nice touch given that you're doing it in live action form. You got to add a few new things here. And they do something with the genie and, like, a backstory, not backstory, but they do something for him that adds more to the character that they couldn't really do too much of in the original animated film with Robin Williams' version because, you know, it's an animated version. But I actually appreciate what they added for the genie in that regard. So, like, I'll say this much. Like, overall, like, I wouldn't mind checking it out again. You know, I don't think I'd pay full price to see it. Like, ideally, like, I would, if I still had, like, MoviePass or, like, AMC stuff, like, you know, whatever, AMC A-List, which, unfortunately, there's no AMC theater near me. It's all Regal theaters.
Yeah, actually, it's the same situation with me.
That's yeah, funny. It's funny. Like, if Regal had like an AMC A-list equivalent, that would be something for me. But it would be something where I would go see it and go like, hey, that wasn't bad. Like, I had a good time watching it. You know, it's one of those things where it's like, if I went there on a nice afternoon just to kind of kick back, and also like, just like you and me, like I mentioned, I just love Disney so much. So whenever I hear anything that reminds me of like that Disney magic, like taking me back to Disneyland or whatever,
yeah, just it's a
can't good lie,
way to, like, get you back in that state of mind.
I can't lie, like it gets me excited. Like there are a few things in the world that bring me back to being a kid than Disney in general, especially like the classic animated films or Disneyland, which at Disneyland it's inseparable. So I can't lie, my foot was tapping. I was having a good time for the most part. I have some issues, obviously, pretty big issues actually, with the movie mm-hmm. that we're about to get into. But I really do want to give this movie some props where it's due. You know, Guy Ritchie, like his stamp isn't really on this movie as much as other Guy Ritchie movies are. You know, and I think you'd agree it's because Disney, they have a bit of a specific
aesthetic,
but also a specific plan for what they want for the movie.
Yeah,
I mean, you see semblances of it, like the way he shoots his movies or even the editing. Like Guy Ritchie's movies have a pretty distinct editing style, and we don't get it that much in this movie except in a few spots.
There's a couple of moments where you know for sure, I think, but other than that, yeah, it kind of remains and what
you
expect.
And you could tell Guy was like, oh, thank God, please, let me do this, at least in this part or that part. He was probably excited to do that.
You're like, fine.
You know, because Guy Ritchie is so known for his distinct style from a lot of his past movies, you know. So I always felt it was weird that they chose him to do Aladdin, of all people, you know. But
because he's not a yes man compared to other
people. No, not at all. Not at all. He's kind of like in that tier of directors where he will put his stamp on something, even if it's a well-known property, you know. Like, he did Man from U.N.C.L.E., I believe, right? Like, he did Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Yeah, he did.
You know, the Sherlock Holmes movies.
Snatch,
King,
I think he did.
King Arthur, even.
Yeah, King Arthur, which was very, very controversial, I think. Or not controversial, just people didn't take a liking to it.
I thought it was okay.
Yeah.
And but he has a specific style that you can't miss. And it's not really apparent in this movie as much as I'd like for it to be. Neither is his very sharp sense of humor or very distinct sense of humor. I mean, maybe there's semblances of that in the movie. But
there's
there.
Moments between like the genie and that new character that they put with Jasmine. But I think that's really it.
Yeah, that's really it. That's really it. There's also another scene involving Aladdin as Prince Ali and the genie where they kind of hint at some sort of humor. But okay, so overall, like I'll say this. I like the movie. I think it's a fun time, especially given, I mean, it's unfortunate because we're kind of playing into the fact that everybody's expectations for this movie were pretty scatterbrained and low because of the marketing overall, and also the fears that we had in terms of how they were going to bring it to life.
Yeah. In a way, it kind of helped me, I guess, because people had lower expectations.
It did. For better or worse, our lowered expectations helped get us to enjoy the movie more. And it looks like audiences are liking it. I mean, my audience, I mean, your audience was non-existent.
Yeah,
non-existent.
Apparently not.
Yeah, but my audience, they were really digging it. They were laughing at much of the film. I hate it when it happens for a lot of movies, but at the end, some were clapping a bit, you know, like at the end of the movie. They were enjoying it, and I can't lie. I was enjoying myself while watching it. I wouldn't mind checking it out again if I were given the chance to without paying, obviously.
Yeah,
but
you wouldn't pay $15 again.
No, not again. No, not again. But it's a good time. Like, if I went to go see it, it's like a fun family film. That's a movie I would see with my family because we like bond over Disney and everything else. But that's where we're at in terms of the positives we'll give it. Like, we liked it overall. Like, we thought it was an okay film.
Yeah, it was definitely fun.
Right?
It's harmless,
it was fine, but
fun.
Yeah, but there's some issues that I think we should discuss overall. You know, like and it's gonna start overall with the performances for the most part. We really praise Will Smith and Naomi Scott. You know, let's get to Aladdin himself, who is played by Mina Massoud, who seems like a really nice guy.
Yes, he does.
I don't think he was bad per se. I just felt like he was going a little too. What's the right word?
Like he was too Broadway, like too overt.
A little bit, and he was also trying to imitate the original animated version, but in live action form.
Yeah.
Where it's like, I get what you're trying to go for, man, and you're almost there. But I think he should have given a bit more of a realistic edge to it. Like, I hate using like the whole edgy kind of thing as a way to describe what I think would have been right, but make
Chris Nolan tone to it.
Christopher Nolan's Aladdin. That would be okay. Who would be Christopher Nolan's genie?
You mustn't be afraid to wish a little bigger, darling.
Yeah, but like Mina Masood, I thought was fine. Like, I just felt it was a little weird the decision he decided to go for, almost bringing the animated version up to life in verbatim. You know, I liked his singing voice, especially during A Whole New World. Like, he almost sounded just like the original version in the animated film when he was singing alongside Naomi Scott. Yeah.
But then and, she just kind of blows him out of the water, though.
Well, she has more experience from what she's done a lot of movies where she sings, yeah. Like Lemonade Mouth, which is a Disney Channel movie. but he's like overall like he's not bad, but he's not like he doesn't stand out that greatly overall, especially when you put him next to the likes of like Naomi Scott and especially Will Smith. No. Although I think he definitely, for
what he had, he did a pretty good job. But I think it gives him a nice little platform for whatever he does next too.
Yeah, I think it's just because of the decision he chose to almost bring the animated version verbatim in live action. But I did like him when he was with the genie, you know, with Will Smith, you know.
Yeah, the chemistry was pretty good.
Yeah, they had good chemistry. I liked him with Jasmine. There were some parts that I thought, hey, that's kind of cute, you know, overall and everything. Other issues I have with the movie, a lot of the CG just isn't impressive. Just not. It's not impressive.
No, I think a lot of it comes with, like, people mentioned the genie, the way they did his face on, like, a fake body.
Oh, yeah, that's not Will Smith's body.
No, it can't be. But that's not, like... It seems like his face was, like, 2 or 3 seconds behind the animation of the body.
Yeah.
I don't know if anybody else noticed that, but it didn't. It looked kind of awkward at points.
It was that, and also, like, the body itself just doesn't seem right. Overall, like, I mean, Will Smith's in pretty damn good shape.
Yeah, he still is.
You know, why not just, yeah, good for him. You know, why can't they just follow it similarly, but kind of appropriate it in a way that makes sense, you know, because they didn't do him any favors with that body. Like another podcast I listened to, they mentioned like, he looks like he has a dad bod. Like, he works out pretty well. His arms look good and everything else. And his pecs are defined, but his abs just aren't fully there yet. You know, like, they're just not fully there. Like, he's eating a little few too many dirty carbs than he should be, you know. So
when you're in that lamp for so long, I guess you have to.
Yeah, of course. Like, you know, animation wise and CGI wise, like, there were like a lot of it was just very unimpressive and very, I mean, some of it was stylized, I guess, trying to kind of like compensate for the sets that they had and trying to make sure it fits. I also kind of wish the scale was a little more grand.
You didn't because think the city scale was big enough?
It's like you couldn't tell if they wanted to go huge or intimate. It's kind of like Steven Spielberg's Hook, where Neverland is so obviously a set.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
It has that syndrome where it's like, it's not bad per se, but it's like, oh, I could tell this is a set. You know?
Yeah, I understand that. I think we can go into that too with the whole new world when they actually do that. I didn't feel the sweeping scale of that moment of them going around on this magic.
It's funny you bring that up. You know, I'll give you that in terms of the scale part, but I thought the sequence itself, I liked it. You know, I liked that sequence. I thought it was really sweet, like in terms of how they brought it with you know, Mina Masood and Naomi Scott flying on the carpet. Like, I enjoyed that. I mean, sure, it's a lot of it is based on the fact that I just love that original so much, and that song is just so iconic.
It's really perfection in song.
Yeah, it's one of the most perfect, like, Disney songs that you could think of. Like, I'm so tempted to just start singing Aladdin's part right now. You know, I still sing it to myself often overall. You know, like, there's that. And, like I said, I overall enjoyed the music. For the most part, I've actually listened to some of the new versions since seeing the movie, and I'm digging what they're going for. Here's the thing though with Will Smith. Will Smith is not the best singer in the world.
No, he's not.
No, he's not the best singer in the world. If anything, they should have just gone full on like
rap.
Because he had a lot of rap sensibilities, like in Friend Like Me, where it really worked, I think.
Yeah, it did work for that song very much.
It works for his personality, but it's whenever he tries to hit those high notes, it's like, no, it's not there. Yeah,
it's like
not
Prince
there.
Ali, and it's just like the same tone.
Yeah. Yeah, like when he's singing Prince Ali and the scale. Like, here's the thing. I like the orchestration updates they did all of there. But I think just the problem is that Will Smith just doesn't have the best singing voice. I mean, he has a great personality, like on the mic. I mean, he was a rapper, obviously, back in his day.
Mm-hmm. Him and DJ Jazzy Jeff.
Yeah, like, respect. But you should have gone a little. If you want to go even harder on the whole, this is a different genie, which I appreciate they did, and they, for the most part, did, go all the way with the music, too, because I like that sense of inventiveness they were going for, like the semblances you hear when you hear, like, Friend Like Me. I like that. I actually been listening to that a bit lately, because I actually kind of like the rhythm of it, and I like his personality on that song. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, he's not the greatest singer. And to be fair, Robin Williams wasn't a singer either, but his personality fit overall.
It shined through in the animation too, especially.
Yeah, it was the animation. It was the perfect marriage of animation and the performer. But then, I think my biggest issue with the movie lies in a particular performer in the film. Yeah. Marwan Kenzari, I believe is his name, right?
Yeah, Kenzari. I think that's exactly how you say it.
Handsome guy. I don't like his take on Jafar.
Okay, I agree with you, but I also disagree. I like what they were going for, but I don't think he executed it all that well.
Yeah. Like, because in the original animated film, Jafar is, he's one of my favorite Disney villains. Like, he's just so conniving, charismatic, and just sinister.
He's like a scary prince.
Absolutely.
Like the artist prince.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He has the best style of any Disney villain, mm-hmm. No doubt. Like, he just has it. And, like, in the original animated film, he's so unforgettable, and he's just so interesting. And here, like, all respect to him. Like, I don't like criticizing performers in anything, because when you're an actor and actress and you make it into the industry...
Yeah, it's really tough.
It's really tough, especially if you're relatively new to it, and if you're... of a certain, like, demographic or, like, race. Mm-hmm. Like, unfortunately, if you're not a white person and you're doing these kinds of roles on a big scale, you get it worse, which sucks. I don't know. There was just something about Marwan Kenzari's performance that just really fell flat to me. Like, for me, my issue with him was that, like, it was his voice. It was the, like, I was never intimidated by him. I just felt like he was just petty. Like, in the worst, and not in the right ways, mm-hmm. You know? He just came off as someone who's like, I just want power, I just want this and that, yeah. But I didn't feel the drive in him. I just didn't feel it at all.
One-dimensional motivation is fine, but if you, like, really come at it with the performance and the spectacle of it, it could work. The idea of him, though, being, like, kind of like the opposite of Aladdin, where, like, he was a con man and a thief, and he kind of just rose
just
the
like
power
him, yeah.
in a way, but he just went the opposite way of Aladdin.
Yeah, like, it makes sense what they were trying to go for. I think I get what you're saying there. But my issue, like I said, is just that I didn't like, I get that they were trying to go for a different take. I just didn't like the performance overall. It just fell flat to me, especially for Jafar, who is such a memorable villain in the original animated film. I just thought, this it just feels funny to me, and it doesn't seem to fit well with, like, the rest of the cast, what they're trying to go for. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I wasn't really a big fan of what they did with the Jafar. And also, Iago the parrot.
You like the Remember you like Iago? Iago in this one?
No, it wasn't I disliked him. It's just that, I think because in the originally animated film, obviously Gilbert Gottfried, also iconic, they don't give him too much personality in this version because he's a real parrot. And
it's very
And they got Alan Tudyk. They got Alan Tudyk to voice him, which is funny.
That was Alan Tudyk? I had a feeling.
That was Alan Tudyk.
I feel like he always gets these animated, like, animal roles now.
Yeah, remember in Moana?
Yeah, he played
the
Hey
chicken.
Hey, right?
He played Hey Hey. That's so hilarious to me, you know, that he got to play Hey Hey the chicken in that movie. You know, but he's basically another bird in here. He doesn't really do much. You don't really get a sense of Iago's personality this time around, which I think it's because they didn't get Gilbert Gottfried back. So if they did, they probably would have gone all in.
No, but see, I think he would have overpowered the performance of Jafar. Because like you're saying,
yeah,
it wasn't that strong, but I think it would have totally overtaken him. If they got
yeah, it would have It would have, and you could have fallen into like almost a Jar Jar Binks situation, almost.
Maybe, yeah.
You know, in terms of the tone that they were trying to go for. I mean, to be fair, the movie has its comedic moments, which I think are part of its highlights. You know, a lot of people compared the movie to like Hitch in a lot of ways with Will Smith.
Oh, when he's helping out Aladdin pick out the his outfit, and he's being like, yeah.
Yeah, basically being his puppet master in a lot of ways, trying to help him out, trying to woo Jasmine. And so it's basically Hitch, but with Will Smith being blue and a genie and everything else. So I enjoyed that. That was part of the movie that I really enjoyed. I found that charming, pretty sweet, you know. And with what they do with Will Smith, again, like it's so funny, everybody was talking like trash on him going into the movie, or maybe not him, but like the design. And to be fair, the design, yes, but honestly, Will Smith is probably the best part of the movie. Yeah. Like, he's just so charming. It reminded me of like the time where, remember when Will Smith was the biggest star in the world?
It was like he couldn't do any wrong, like 15 years ago.
Yeah, he was the biggest star in the world. Like every time he opened the 4th of July, basically. Like 4th of July was like Will Smith Day or whatever.
Yeah,
like, you know, and
let's get ready to go
a
see
new
it.
Movie coming out. You know, I remember being a kid going to see Hancock. That's just a random example. But like, and nowadays, like Will Smith is still fine in movies. It's just that I feel like he's been having weird decisions in his filmography.
Yeah,
because he was Tarantino's choice to play Django. Remember?
He was, but he rejected it, right?
He rejected it because he wanted to be the one that shot Candy, Leo DiCaprio's character. How amazing would that have been, though? Like, how cool would that have been? I mean, Jamie's great.
I could visualize it. It sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, and it would have been a good opportunity for him in his career. But, you know, I'm pretty happy with Jamie Foxx. But, yeah, but, like, that's so funny because Will Smith just continues to make some interesting decisions in his career that I think, man, dude, you're at this point in your career where you really can do whatever you want, but also you should be able to take on roles with some of these great directors that can get these performances out of you. Because charismatic, yes, you are Will Smith, but you have also showcased how great of an actor you can be, you know?
He's very versatile.
Yeah,
sure.
Like everybody, there's a reason why nobody forgot about that moment from Fresh Prince.
Yeah,
you know, where,
oh my God.
Like where he was crying to Uncle Phil about his dad.
Because he was really, I think that was like an improv moment, wasn't it? He kind of just let loose, I think. From what I heard, I think he was really, because he was really talking about his father in real life.
Well, apparently that's not true.
That's not true? Okay.
That's an urban legend, because Will Smith actually did have a relationship with his dad that was positive for the most part from what I read. That's a common thing that you see on Facebook that everybody, like you're cut, that you're... So you were duped. That's something that you see everybody on Facebook, like maybe you have like an aunt or an uncle that share an article that they think is true, but then you look at it, it's like, no, you fell for it.
Look at this
fake
trailer
news.
For Spider-Man 6.
Yeah, or they'll share like that photo of like Scarlett Johansson as she's cast as Mulan or something like that. And it's like,
oh
of course
God,
not. You know, so you were duped. But from there's a reason why we always bring that scene up in terms of his acting chops, because he is a brilliant actor. And, you know, Pursuit of Happiness, you know, not the Kid Cudi song, but the movie. like, it's, he got nominated for an Oscar for that role, you know?
Yeah.
Like, he showcased he's a really, really great actor, and I want him to do more roles like that. I mean,
it seems
he's
like
great.
He's doing Gemini Man next, which can go either
with Ang
way.
Lee, yeah. That can go either way. Like, Ang Lee's last movie, which I unfortunately missed, didn't perform so well.
Halftime
Walk?
Because he was...
He tried to do something with that cinematography wise or whatever.
Yeah, so
apparently
60 frames per second, I think.
Yeah, it was like The Hobbit, but on steroids with the frame rate, and people just didn't respond to it as well. Just to say this much, stick to 24 frames.
Yeah,
just stick to 24 frames. Okay.
People don't respond to it. Casual audiences don't care, and it's cool that you're experimenting, but just make its cinematic form is best at 24.
Absolutely. So we're starting to go on a bit of a tangent beyond Aladdin. But here's the thing. Overall, I have my problems with Jafar. Although I think I appreciate Mina Massoud in some of the parts in the movie. I felt like his take was a little too, it just wasn't fully there for me, you know. But and then a few other things in regards to like what they were trying to do. I didn't feel like Billy Magnussen, who I think is a good actor, didn't need to be in this movie.
He did feel out of place.
He didn't need to be in the movie. When I heard they cast him in the movie as just this new character from a different place that's trying to become a potential husband to Jasmine, people were pretty disappointed because, like, why do we need to add another white dude in there? And I kind of was with that chorus to an extent, thinking, like, yeah, we don't need that. You know, we have all the other characters here in there. Why do we need to put him in there?
Yeah, he was literally and there for not, a little comedy bit that didn't really work.
It didn't work, which is a pity because Billy Magnussen is really funny.
Yeah, he is. If you've seen Game Night, you would know for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Anybody who's seen Game Night out there.
How would that benefit Frito-Lay? Sorry, I had to reference that. But, like, overall, like, here's the thing with Aladdin. Like, you and I would agree, we had a good time. It's a good time. I wouldn't mind checking it out again. Like, if Disney sent me the Blu-ray, I wouldn't complain. You know, it would be fun to put on. I've listened to a lot of the versions of the songs that they done. Well, except the DJ Khaled remix, which, by the way, at the very, I keep hearing at the end credits or like at the end of the movie, Aladdin ends with DJ Khaled, and I was kind of worried that was going to be what happened because they end with an end credit sequence or a dance number.
Of like Shrek 2 or something.
Yeah, I was scared though because I thought, because at the end of the movie, there's a dance number basically. And I thought DJ Khaled was going to pop up.
If that happened, I would have laughed so hard.
I would have, honestly, I would have cheered in the audience. Going like, you know what? You. Go for it. Go for it. That would have been amazing. Can you imagine DJ Khaled just popping up, you know, and then you just. God, that would have been great. That would have been hilarious.
He's got a bottle of Ciroc in his hand or something. He's got his, like, his hell with Nikes.
Yeah, oh, yeah, but he's just standing there amongst the rest of the cast. But overall, like, the movie, I enjoyed it, especially when you take into account expectations from most audiences were pretty low after that big TV spot and reveal with Will Smith as the genie, you know, and a few other marketing elements that just didn't work out. Mm-hmm. But I had a good time. I did have a good time. I'd go as far as to say that I liked it. I liked it. But it's that kind of like where you give it like a high C plus, almost a B minus. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like you're almost being respectful in a way, but like... You wouldn't venture out. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like you're describing, like, I don't think it's anything remarkable, but I enjoyed it.
It's like
one of those things
where you go to a restaurant and get a plate that you know you're going to like, but it's nothing that, like, blows your mind.
It's fast food.
It's just kind of the norm for you.
It's fast food. It's a McDonald's meal, which I just had earlier before we recorded this podcast. It's like you get what you expect and or what you're going for. It's comfort food. It's nothing gourmet. It's nothing that great, you know, and we could talk all about the issues we have with, like, Disney remaking a bunch of these animated classics because...
But, I mean, they're making so many of them that there's no point in complaining. We might as well just accept it. As long as they do a good job with them, I'm not going to complain that much.
Yeah, like, for all the complaints, like, about, like, with Lion King and everything else, we can complain about it all we want, but let's be real, I'm going to see that probably three times.
We're going to see it, and potentially, at least I will potentially cry at that, but nostalgia, I think.
Yeah. A lot of it's nostalgia. I mean, with Lion King, I can't lie. I am excited to see it because Lion King is my favorite Disney movie. I grew up on that. You know, it's one of my favorite movies ever. It means a lot to me. I've seen the Broadway musical, not on Broadway, but in Las Vegas. I love that so much. You know, and also the notion of, you know, Donald Glover and Beyonce in it, along with like Seth Rogen. I mean, it sounds cool.
Cast of people.
It's a great cast. I have issues with the fact that because you're going so realistic with the animals, it's just not going to be as exciting or animated as it is stylized in the original.
there's a lot of saturation going on.
Yeah, it is what it is, though. And here's the thing, like, Disney continuing to remake these movies, it's not taking away the originals.
No, never.
So whenever people complain about those things...
People and young kids want to, like, watch those.
Yeah, so for better or for worse... Are these movies necessary? No, I don't think they're necessary at all. They're not needed, but hopefully we get more movies that are kind of similar to Kenneth Branagh's Cinderella, Jon Favreau's Jungle Book, and to a certain extent, this movie, Aladdin.
Yeah. I mean, only thing is, as long as they make these rewatchable and give people a reason to come back to watch them, that's what I'm looking for in these.
Yeah, like overall, like... if you want to go check the movie out, I'd say go check it out. Like, if you were interested in the movie and it and like our podcast or even like early reactions from critics or audiences sway you into wanting to watch it, go check it out. Like, it's a good time overall, especially if you have a lot of nostalgia for the original. That's basically what it is. It rided on my love for the original and also a decent rendition of the original songs, as well as a welcoming and likable new version of the genie that you can't replicate what came before, which was perfection.
Yeah.
But if you went all the way different, like what you did with Will Smith, that's something I appreciate, which makes me curious to if Mulan, which comes out next year, happens to have Mushu.
Oh, that's next year? Oh, my God.
Yeah, it comes out next year in March 2020, I believe.
That's less than a year away.
God. Yeah. I'm actually pretty excited for that one because I love Mulan, but I'm also curious to see how they bring that version to life.
I wonder if they're going to go dark with that or if they're going to play on, like, I feel like that's where they can deviate the most from, like, the anime version.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, everybody was complaining about how it may not have the songs, which I would complain too because I love those songs from Mulan so much.
Just put Reflections and Make a Man Out of You and we're good.
Just do it. Like, you could even do the instrumental versions of those in epic ways or something, you know. But yeah, like, there's that with Mulan coming out next year. Disney's going to continue remaking live-action versions of their classic animated films. It's only a matter of time before they do Song of the South.
Oh, my God.
I shouldn't have made that joke.
It's going to be a reflection of our time.
reflection of our time. Spike Lee's Song of the South.
Jeez.
Can you imagine? Oh, Disney would never. I mean, it's so funny. Disney wants to pretend Song of the South doesn't exist,
but
and
they
yet
have
they
Splash
have
Mountain.
Splash Mountain. Imagine all the kids. Like, I always wonder whenever I ride Splash Mountain, I see the kids going, what is this a movie, right? What movie is this? I want to see it. Oh, sorry about that. It's in the vault.
About that, son
and
or daughter.
it's in the vault and will never come out of the vault. And the only way you could watch it is through not-so-legal means.
Not even Disney Plus could save you from that.
Nope, not even Disney Plus and everything else. And it's a boring movie, if I'm being honest. I've seen Song of the South. It's a boring movie.
Yeah? Is it like...
Yeah.
I haven't seen it. I've just seen, like, the notorious clips of it.
Okay, obviously there are those issues, obviously socially and racially, given the times and everything else. I mean, Uncle Remus is great. He's the best part of the movie, you know, and some of the animated sequences are cool, but it's really boring by the end of the day. It's a really boring movie with nothing much to it, and it's only remembered because of the controversy and the fact that there's a Disneyland and Disney World ride based on it.
Yeah.
You know, but overall, that was Aladdin. Both John and I seem to enjoy it. And, despite our cynicism about Disney live-action remakes...
Yeah, I would recommend it, too, if you're a fan.
Yeah. That's the thing. Like, John and I, we've visited the respective Disney parks many times Many times. And I'll tell you this much, I never get tired of it. I never get tired of going there because a lot of my favorite childhood memories and memories to this day are related to, like, going to the Disney parks and watching Disney movies, rewinding the VHS tapes... and everything else, like, for better or for worse, call it corporate shills if you can. Oh man, I wish we were if Bob Iger was sending us checks, heck yeah, dude.
Every
you know?
Good thing you say, you get like it's like $15.
Give me front of the line passes to Galaxy's Edge and everything else. You know that'd be great.
Get that 4-hour trip there.
Oh yeah, yeah, exactly. But so that was the second episode of the Blank Green Canvas podcast. Thank you so much for listening to us ramble about Aladdin and DJ Khaled and all these things. First of all, I wanted to thank you, John, for appearing on this episode. I'm really happy to have had you on here. We've known each other for years, actually.
Yeah, for a long, long time. We still haven't met each other
back
in
the day.
Person, but hoping to make that happen someday soon.
Hopefully in the near future, yes. That's why when you hear this, the audio is going to sound completely different than last week's, which was just me and three of my friends in a round table using one mic. That's why you hear John's really expensive mic on his end as well, helping out. But John, you have anything that you want to plug before we close this podcast on Aladdin?
I guess if I have anything to plug, I was on a hiatus for a while, but I just came back to start making a new podcast type of variety show. I'm doing a movie show on Mondays and Star Wars show on Tuesdays. It's at Mothman Jones, 2 F's, no spaces. And if you want to find me anywhere else on social media, it's the same thing, John Maffeo, Mothman Jones.
Thank you. And with that, I am Noah Villaverde, host of the Blank Green Canvas podcast. Thank you for listening, and tune in again next week when me and my friend Alan Gunn are going to be discussing Godzilla, King of the Monsters.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you very much, and thank you for supporting the podcast. We'll be right back.